So jó reggelt kívánok again. Thank you. That's the extent of That's the extent of my Hungarian. I thought that I would start by setting a bit of the context and a little bit of stage. So let me start with a series of what I would call converging contextual trends that I see going on. And they're rather obvious once they're said, but they need to be said. Science and technology are ever more embedded in every aspect of modern life. I'm not going to go through this list, but this is the major issues of the day, and you can't think of a major societal issue that doesn't have a science and technology component, either as a cause or a cure. But the consequence of that fact means that for everyone to prosper in modern society, they have to have access to and they have to have a fundamental understanding and comfort with science and technology. The obverse is also true, of course. In order for science as an enterprise to prosper, it has to have a strong and positive relationship with the rest of society. And more countries have learned that in order for them to prosper, they need to have their own indigenous scientific capacity, and they have to have national policies of a broad range that reflect the best science. So I made this point that more and more countries are investing in science and building their own national science enterprise. The motivation that's quoted frequently has to do with innovation in the economy or solving other local problems, dealing with the health and quality of life of their citizens. This is just to show you some trends that are going on. I don't have a pointer, so you'll have to just guess the color of the lines. As you can see, this is over time, the research and development expenditures, and what's important here is that although over the course of the last 20-some years, investments in Europe and the United States have continued to increase, those in Asia are going up at a much faster rate. This is the annual rate of growth of research and development expenditures, and those at the right are India, South Korea, Taiwan, Thailand, Singapore, Malaysia, and China. And what you see is that emerging science communities in Asia are in fact receiving more and more money, while over the course of that same period, the United States, Europe, and Japan have stayed relatively constant. The measure that everybody always talks about is research and development as a percentage of GDP, and you can see the United States has been pretty stable over the course of the last decade or so. European Union is fairly stable. China is going up very rapidly. Japan has moved up some. Countries like South Korea are increasing their investments. What's important about all of this is that what it means is that a scientific enterprise that traditionally was concentrated in a small number of countries is more and more being distributed around the world. So what this chart shows is in black from 1996 and in brown from 2007, the percentage of the worldwide research and development expenditures that were in North America, in Europe, Asia Pacific region, the rest of the world, and you can see that the distribution is shifting, and it's shifting in part towards Asia and the Pacific region. This is number of researchers, same kind of trends. They're all telling us the same thing, and that is while some countries are relatively stable in the number of researchers over time, other countries, notably China, are going up at a tremendous rate. Finally, this is my last trend slide. I'm obsessed with data, so I apologize for that. They're all making exactly the same point, so if you weren't able to read the chart, don't worry about it. They all said the same thing. Distribution is going wider. This is the annual growth rate in the number of researchers. On the right, you have South Korea, Taiwan, China, Singapore. You'll notice in Russia, it's actually decreased over that same period. US, Europe, Japan, not going up. Number of articles published in different countries. You see the same kind of redistribution going on. I think it's important to mention that Europe has been out-publishing the United States in total number of articles for many years. Asia is now going up at a tremendous rate, particularly in China. The conclusion is pretty straightforward from all of those trend slides, and that is that science is going on in more parts of the world. The distribution and the balance among countries and economies are, in fact, shifting. A second contextual point is that science, over time, has become more and more collaborative. The original model of a single researcher working in his or her own lab, you know, sort of banging their head against their own bench, has changed. It has become a much more collaborative kind of an enterprise. This is a chart. All of these are from science indicators put out by the National Science Foundation in the U.S., but this shows the percentage of articles that involve international co-authorship, right? So more than one country is represented in the authors of the articles. The EU percentage has gone up quite a bit. The US has gone up. Japan has gone up. It's interesting that China has not, in fact, gone up, particularly at a time when the number of researchers and the overall spending has gone up tremendously. Because I'm the executive publisher of Science Magazine, I thought it would be polite to bring the data from science, which we get asked about all the time. And more we're finding that published papers have more than one country represented among the authorship, and that really is the point of that bar on your right. So, the trends: every major issue of modern life has a science component. More and more nations are recognizing the importance of having a science enterprise, and science is crossing borders. So the critical question that I think we're trying to pose in this session is, are we getting the most out of these trends? Are we, in fact, maximizing the impact of those science technology activities going on now in so many parts of the world? So my underlying, I'm trying to decide whether to call it a hypothesis, a theory, or I just believe it. So it'll be an I just believe it, is that every major issue has a science and technology component is met simultaneously with a point that every major issue is also global or multinational in character. Almost none of them are unique to a particular country or a particular economy. And that suggests to me that seeking solutions to those problems that will, in fact, have impact that's broader than an individual national scale or begins to meet the needs of society requires that we begin with a global perspective. And what that implies, in turn, is that national science and technology communities need to function nationally, of course, but they also have to become a much more integral part of a global scientific enterprise. And I believe we can only contribute fully to global problems if the scientific community itself is and can function in a truly global way. So how do you get that to happen? Well, you have to change the basic mindset. And I can tell you that in my own country, in the United States, this is really tough. The U.S. loves being the biggest and the best in anything that it does, and that, in fact, conflicts with the notion of being a part of a truly global partnership among other elements of the scientific enterprise, writ broad. But it does require a lowered level of sort of cross-national competitiveness. It doesn't actually matter whether the U.S. is preeminent in the world in science. It just is necessary to be among the most eminent scientific communities. I can tell you that members of our Congress, our equivalent of a parliament, don't understand that concept at all. they fundamentally believe or act as if they believe we have to be the very best at everything, even if they're not willing to invest in it. So better global science benefits everybody, and it's a change in psychology. It's a change in the mindset. So what do we need to have that happen? We need increased mobility of scientists in the short term and the long term, increased mobility of funding. We have to allow people to take their grants with them. I think one of the most creative things that Europe done collectively has done is to make money mobile, to make money movable. The United States, you may know, that's nearly impossible. Even from one institution to another is a major event. You have to negotiate it with both institutions, the former one and the future one, and our rules need to be adjusted. Increased flexibility of funding policies. Many countries believe that if you take money outside of the country, then the citizens who paid the taxes to provide the money are somehow being cheated out of the benefits. Again, my own country has some of those policies, and they need to be changed. But to build a truly global scientific community, we need to have an environment that, in fact, fosters true partnership and true collaboration among the members. And what that means to me is that instead of having national standards, for example, for how science is conducted and what the standards, what the ethics are, is that we need to have global standards. We need to move to a broader kind of approach to these problems. Publication and access, you can read as well as I, scientific ethics, intellectual property. We need countries to bring greater consistency to their science policies, or it's almost impossible for collaborations to occur. The use of animal subjects is an obvious example. Another one that affects, again, my own country dramatically are policies around the conduct of embryonic stem cell research. We also need to do a far better job than we're doing at bringing the scientific communities that are emerging, particularly in the South, in the developing world, into the global community in a partnership way as opposed to a patronizing kind of a way, and we need to coordinate funding policies. I alluded to that before. The last one on this particular list has to do with bureaucracies. Everybody always thinks their country has the greatest amount of bureaucracy, but I need to tell you, my country wins. We have a by now rather famous statistic that 42% of an American researcher's research time, not their total time in life, right? But their research time, 42%, is spent on administrative bureaucratic details. I have been making this point for the last decade. I have made no progress in getting it resolved, but I'll continue to make the point. It's a terrible waste of scientific investment to have people being bureaucrats. So I've been in some of these discussions before. Ernst Ludwig Winnicker, whom many of you know, I stole this slide from him, is making the point we need international review policies, a focus on common priorities, more flexible and nimble funding. You can read again, bring scientists into international activities earlier in their careers, and a willingness to go to less developed countries in partnership. Suzanne Fortier from NSERC in Canada made these points. We need an open environment, common priorities again, nimble funding, encourage rewards for working abroad or in development, and of course, ways to recruit and reward young scientists who are doing international global work. I think that there are an array of organizations, and I just stopped listing them. If it's your organization, please either don't feel left out or feel that you have been left off the hook. But in fact, every global multinational organization ought to be working towards the same set of goals. And I think that globalization should be discussed at all global fora. We're going to have a discussion this afternoon called the Forum of Global Fora. That's really high-level English. I like that. A forum of fora. In any event, I'm going to raise that point this afternoon. Some efforts have been done to, for example, foster common standards in Europe. The European Science Foundation put out this publication, Fostering Research Integrity in Europe. The Singapore Statement on Research Integrity is another kind of a starting point for establishing more global standards. And I think I'll end with what I call the gorilla in the room. I confess, I didn't take that picture. I did see gorillas, but I didn't take that picture. One of the things that will make this more difficult over time is that the gorilla in the room is the economic situation that's affecting many countries. So that while some countries are increasing their investments of science, some other countries may be decreasing their investments. Not only will that shift the distribution of science among countries around the world, but it will, of course, influence the ability of some countries, my own may be included, to participate in global kinds of activities. We are in the process of beginning to rethink our science system in the face of global challenges. At the risk of sounding like I'm bragging, I had an editorial in this week's Science called Rethinking the Science System. I think that all of us, as the economic climate changes, are going to need to rethink, recreate how we support and conduct science, both nationally and globally. And all of those kinds of issues will influence globalization and its prospects. Thank you.